Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
This episode is brought to you by Paramount Plus. Get in, loser! Mean Girls is now streaming on Paramount Plus. Join Katie Heron as she meets the plastics and Tina Fey's new twist on the modern classic. Get ready for more of the rumors, backstabbing, and jokes you loved from the original movie with some fetch surprises. Rated PG-13. Wear pink and head to ParamountPlus.com to try it free.
What's going on, everybody? Hope you are having a wonderful week so far. So, this week on the podcast is good friend of mine called Oon. He is DJ, producer, more so live artist, super techno, super cool music. He actually lives with me. So this is the first in-person podcast we did. Sadly, the bloody video didn't work. I either didn't hit record or didn't, I don't know what happened, but it didn't work. But this is all audio, so I apologize for those people on YouTube. But yeah, without further ado, Oon, we're live, man. How are you?
We're live. I'm good.
This is weird. It's like it's the first like in person podcast I've ever done.
Used to like looking at a screen.
Right? Yeah, it's like used to Zoom conversations and shitty internet connections.
Right.
but this is nice. It's kind of like obviously at the home studio.
Yeah.
And it's weird because there's a screen right there and it's hard to
it's
not,
hard
look,
not
at
to look at it yeah
it's hard not to look at the screen. So if I'm looking at the screen, just tell me off.
It's like the first thing you learn in acting, right? Is like
not to look,
don't
at,
look at the camera.
Yeah. Yeah, it's weird. You gotta kind of act like nothing's there. It's weird. But how's life?
Pretty good. Yeah, not too bad. Just been writing a lot of music lately. Played a couple gigs since June. That was like my first gig back. It was July, late July. It was my first like post-COVID gig, which was nice.
And yeah.
Ever since then, it's been somewhat steady.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's good to get back in the swing of things a bit, right?
How is it? Ralph's just entered the room, by the way. Ralph's the Ryan's cat. How's it been getting back into the swing of things after lockdown? Obviously, lockdown was shit, but...
Yeah. It's been really good. It was... Lockdown for me was... not gonna lie, like pretty depressing, like as far as like output and creativity. Started off decent, but then did a lot of nothing over the lockdown, as far as music's concerned. But since performing again, it's given me a reason to write, you know, music again, because the live performance is a big part of my you know, creativity and stuff. So
why did you choose, because for anybody that doesn't know what you do, like the live, you purely play live, you don't DJ or anything like that.
Yeah.
What was the choice? Did you have a DJ before?
Yeah, yeah. When I started just DJing. Mm. And before that, I was in bands, played in bands forever and ever, played guitar and drums. And yeah, so for like 4 or 5 years, I only DJed. And that's like when I was learning to produce, because the end game for me was always to like be a producer.
Yeah.
But, you know, when you first start, you're pretty bad. for a while, you know, and I, you know, still improving, of course, but, so yeah, DJing was the obvious choice, but once I started producing a bunch, what I found was, you know, I'd do a bunch of production, write a bunch of tracks, and then I'd get booked for a gig, and then I'd be like, oh shit, you know, I gotta like get a bunch of music now DJ set. Yeah. So it just like made more sense to, try to do something like with my own music, do like a live thing or something.
And you write a lot.
Yeah.
Like a lot.
Yeah. Maybe not as much as you. Or maybe same. I don't know. Yeah.
At the moment, like I've not written anything. For ages. But you seem to be working on a lot all the time.
Yeah.
For anyone that doesn't know, Ryan and I live together. So I was going to kind of
fit in the room.
Yeah, I'm going to talk about this in the intro, but we've lived together for 4 years.
Yeah. Can't believe it.
Mate, that's crazy. So far. And it was kind of like the perfect fit where, who was it, Nader?
Yeah.
Nader put us in touch and then was like, well, I've got this techno producer that needs a studio. And I was like, well, I've got a basement. Didn't you come, you first moved in the house and put the studio upstairs in your in the
I
room?
I was thinking about it because there's, because when I lived in Kansas City, my studio was like in my room, you know, and it was just like, that's what it was, in my bedroom. And then when I moved to Detroit, the first place I lived, I had like a dedicated studio. And once you have that, you're like, oh my God. Like
it's game changer.
It's hard
it?
To go back.
Yeah. It's, what is that about? Do you think it's cause like you, then you're not sleeping?
I think it's just like a change of scenery, right? Yeah. It's why, you know, people like to have studios like not in their house.
Yeah.
You know, some people prefer that cause it's easy to like
get out.
Yeah. Like go do something, go somewhere.
I used to have a studio outside when I lived in LA. I used to have a studio outside of the house, and I hated it. It felt like I was going to work every day.
Yeah.
It was like, also in LA, you got to deal with the fucking traffic,
right? And, which is not good.
And you like have to leave at a certain time,
right?
Otherwise, it's game over.
Yeah.
But I think ever since, like before that, I always had a studio in the house or in the bedroom,
right?
But it's much nicer having it in house.
Oh, I agree. Yeah.
I don't know any situation where I'd have it outside of the house.
Right. Like the only, if I lived in like an apartment, had to.
Yeah.
That'd be the only time.
Ralph's going to do it. What's up, dude? It's definitely, it would be nice to build something in your garden. Maybe like another outbuilding.
Yeah.
It could be really interesting because then it's like, you go to work.
Right.
It's completely separate. Whereas here is like, you could just pop into the kitchen.
Exactly.
Pop and do things. But I think it is nice to have a studio. But like, you've been in the studio down in the basement for 4 years.
Yeah.
How do you find it?
It's not bad. It's pretty good. Ralph's giving us trouble.
Ralph's gonna, let's be honest. Ralph's the cat, by the way.
I'm like a pretty low maintenance producer as far as like having a space and everything. And the space downstairs actually works for me. It's better than my old space when I had like a bedroom studio, you know? I've made like makeshift like soundproofing and stuff, which is kind of funny. It's like, but it works, you know? I do have to check things in headphones a lot, which is a good habit to be in anyway, you know, even if you have like a nice studio.
I never do that.
Yeah.
Well, I should, but I never do. Why do you do that?
I tend to like, I feel like I use a lot of reverb on like a lot of my stuff.
Yeah.
And for me, I've found like, even when I work in here sometimes, which is, you know, sounds much better, obviously, but, like if you have like lots of reverb, like it can sound pretty good on monitors and you put headphones on and you're like, oh, that's like, it's like way too much.
Yeah.
You get in there and like EQ it a bit.
Yeah.
But I, for a long time, I didn't check in headphones cause I was like, oh, I have a studio now. Cause when I learned it was all headphones.
Yeah.
So I was like, you know, just a laptop and headphones, you know?
It's interesting though. I was talking to Mika, one of my friends, I think you met him.
Yeah.
Bondi. We were talking about today about living in LA, and there's so many people that live in apartments now that are like big producers that don't have speakers. They're just doing everything in headphones.
Right. Yeah.
And then just go and pay to get it mixed down.
sure.
by somebody else. And it's an interesting process. I think for me, like, I can write in headphones, but yeah. I just think it just takes the, we're making the club music.
Yeah, it takes a lot of the fun out of it for me, because it's like, you want to, like, you know,
feel it.
Crank it a bit, feel it.
Yeah, definitely. I agree with that. I agree. Why Detroit?
So basically, you know, I'm from Kansas City, lived in Kansas City my whole life. And, you know, I had friends in Detroit, and I was looking to move somewhere that had, like, a better or, like, bigger music scene than Kansas City. But I was also, like, the same time I was going to move, I was quitting my job, you know, my day job. Yeah. And I was like, okay, I'm just going to do this music thing. So, you know, cost played a big part of, like, where I chose because, you know, who wouldn't want to live in, like, you know, New York City or some of these places, but it's, like, so expensive.
Yeah.
So to Detroit just seemed like a good fit. And it's like, you know, I'm a Midwesterner. So it's like,
it's home.
It wasn't that different, you know, living here over Kansas City. So, it was like a multitude of things and, you know, movement and, you know, that's nice to have up here. So,
yeah. Did you play movement?
I was booked to play the year 2020.
Yeah.
The one that got canceled.
Yeah.
I did, like, the live stream instead because they did, like, the live streaming thing. But, no, I have not played the festival. I was pretty bummed because it was, like, I was stoked, you know. I was like, But
it was you'll get booked.
Yeah, I think they're doing it this year. We'll see what happens. But
yeah, they're doing it next year.
Yeah.
They're definitely doing it.
Yeah.
I think you'll get booked. Yes. Have a word with Chuck. Drop him a text.
Yeah. Yeah. You're like, hey, what's going on?
So I want to talk about how, like, the style of techno that you write.
Sure.
For me is, like, proper techno.
Yeah.
Like, I sometimes, like, people sometimes say that I write techno and I don't write techno compared to the techno that you write. It's a huge scene.
Yeah.
But it's also super niche.
Sure, sure.
Where did that come from? Because obviously from playing in bands, I can imagine the bands that you played in were, like, pretty, like, rock.
Yeah, yeah. It was, like, extreme metal.
Yeah.
Like, you know, which, super heavy,
which
dark.
Makes sense with the techno that you write is, like, kind of still in that same realm.
Right.
Where did it start? Like, how did it go from the rock to the techno?
So for me, it was basically, so I've always been into, like, electronic music. You know, started for me with, like, Warp Records, you know, that type of stuff, so Autechre, Aphex Twin.
Yeah.
And, you know, playing in bands forever and ever. Like, I played in bands for, like, 10 years. And you start to, like, it's really hard to get, like, four other people on the same page.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
You know, one person wants to go this direction, one person wants to go to this direction, one person's, like, this serious about it, this person's, like, this serious about it.
Yeah.
So it's kind of hard to do it, like, super seriously and find, like, four people that want to do that super seriously. Yeah. So just, like, that kind of whole situation got me thinking of trying to do something like a solo act or whatever. And then I think the DJ thing just, you know, I can't think exactly what, like, got me interested in it other than just wanting to, like, do some expression, like, solo.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that, like, kind of seemed like a good fit.
Mm. Were you listening to techno beforehand?
Yeah, I was, but it was, like, I listened to a lot of, like, compact records, like, from Köln, like, the more melodic.
Mm.
I guess, like, maybe a little more accessible. Yeah. You know, when I first started listening, it was, you know, a lot of big room stuff, and I'm like, oh, yeah, like,
yeah.
I like the sound. It's like big kick drums, you know, just like metals, like, you know, super fast, like huge kick drums and stuff. So that was, like, a good Ralph.
Chilling.
But yeah, so the techno thing, get him out of here. I think a big thing for me was I heard this group called the Sandwell District, which is, like, Function, Regis, Female, just, like, all these legendary techno producers. And they had this, like, specific sound that was, like, it's cold, but it's also, like, evocative, you know, and emotional.
Yeah, yeah.
But it kind of has this, like, steely, like, coldness to it, which this, like, machine techno thing.
Okay. I've not heard of them before.
Yeah, yeah. So that kind of got me wanting to produce,
yeah,
you know, and start like, okay, I'm going to like try to make some stuff like this. And then like the first stuff I produced was like so bad. It was awful.
What year was that? Can you remember?
It was 2010.
Okay.
2009, 2010.
Yeah, yeah.
So it was because I started, you know, playing music. I started guitar like 1996, you know, when I was like pretty young. And then the last band I played in was like 2009, 2010. Yeah, so it was like a... I'm going to do something with music and it's not going to be this anymore. So maybe I'll try this, you know.
It's always interesting to see how people kind of get into it because especially the like techno, Ralph is just like, don't worry, just stay there, dude. It's interesting to see how people get, especially in the genre that you're in.
Yeah.
Like I understand the more like accessible dance music, people generally usually get into like the more accessible dance music and then go a little bit more underground to a certain extent. Whereas where you're at is like, it's very underground.
Yeah.
When you're doing the rock band, was it similar where you're like, we're playing to like, it's going to be hard to get.
Yeah.
It's huge.
But for sure.
It's fun. You're doing it because you absolutely love it.
Yeah, I think like the biggest bands and like the genres I was playing in, they would play festivals, you know, bigger festivals. But like when they would like tour around and stuff, it'd be like little rock clubs, you know, like L Club, you know, here in Detroit. Yeah. So like that size, you know.
That's cool.
So then like the techno thing aesthetically, it was like, I don't know why I'm attracted to like, you know, playing this type of music that is not going to get you, you know, that much, I guess, know, but it's just, I've always just kind of done whatever I felt like creatively. I've never, been like, okay, I should make something like this or I should make something like this. It just always comes naturally.
Is it? So I guess this is the thing, it's kind of, cause it's tough. Like, on a business sense in the industry, right? Like,
for sure.
There's, in certain genres, there's like a few people that are massive. Then you have like a big, like kind of co-support, co-headline support kind of. And then you have the people that are up and coming. In your kind of scene, that it feels like, and I could be wrong because I don't know much about it, but it feels like there could be like even smaller of amount of people that are super successful.
Oh, for sure.
And then even like at the sport level and also at the coming up.
Yeah. Yeah. There's like a very limited amount of like spots, I guess you would say, you know, cause it's like, you know, the biggest thing's probably like, you know, Berghain, like that's like the big, thing everyone wants. And so you got like, I mean, I guess like Ben Clark would probably be like the biggest name. That's like somewhat similar to what I'm doing, and even he's like a little more like
accessible
but he's also just like an incredible DJ.
Which is mental to say that.
Yeah. But he's just like an amazing DJ who's like pretty versatile, where I do like a live set where it's kind of like
it's
gonna be this, and if you book me it's gonna be this type of thing, which kind of like pigeonholes me even more. Yeah. Which I've thought about, but
I think that's the thing though, isn't it? I think you have to enjoy what you do.
Sure.
And I think you're a massive, like, it goes to show that we don't do what we do to make a shit ton of money.
Yeah.
A shit ton of money would be nice.
Yeah.
But realistically, it's like, we only do it because we absolutely love making music.
Oh, absolutely.
And I think there comes a point when it flips, when you've had a bit of success and you're like, oh shit, how do I get more of that?
Yeah, you but get
then
a taste.
And then it's also realizing like, oh, I need to actually just go back to what I'm doing.
Sure.
And really just enjoy making the music that I make.
Yeah. Yeah, if you're in it to make money, there's like so much easier things you can do in life.
Yeah.
To make, you know, over like this, you know, music shit. Cause it's like,
how come you gave up your day job at that point? Like what was the point in your career where you're like, I'm ready to give it up?
It was basically like a sink or swim type thing. It was like, you know, I'm going to like fully immerse myself in this. And, you know, if it doesn't work, you know, if I have to get a job in a couple of years, no big deal. But, if I don't at least try it, you know, I'm definitely going to, I know I'll regret it, you know, if I don't at least like try to make this work, you know? And it was like the fact that I was like moving to another city, like made it make a little sense. And I had like some savings. So it, if I didn't do it at that point, I was probably, you know, never going to do it.
Yeah.
So it wasn't like I, had like a ton of gigs and I was like, oh, this is like, this is it. I can do this now. It was more of, you know, I'm just going to like write a ton of music and make like do this full time, you know, see what happens.
Yeah. I respect that. Cause I think there's two ways, isn't there? There's two ways to do it. There's either that way that you did it or wait until keep working until you literally can't work anymore. And until it, but I also think sometimes I heard a saying the other day that your 9 to 5 pays for your 7 to 1.
Yeah.
And it's kind of a nice saying because it's, we all need to earn money.
Yeah.
We all need to have at some point where we need to pay the bills. And I think it's great for anyone that's willing to go, fuck it, I'm going to just make it work.
Yeah. Yeah. I would, I don't know if I would like recommend a lot of people to, like I've kind of made it work, but it's hard, you know, it's tough. There's definitely ups and downs. I think each person kind of has to make that call, you know, themselves.
I think it depends on what you, on how you want your life to be as well.
Sure.
Like when you're, when it's like anything, when you're being self-employed, right?
Yeah.
It's like you don't have that guaranteed income every month for anyone. And then especially when you have a global pandemic. Shit. But it's definitely the best feeling when it works.
Oh, absolutely. Like, it's like there's no better feeling. And then when it does work, you know, you're like, okay, this is why I'm doing this, you know?
Did you have growing up, like, I don't know, even now, like, you got friends that are in, like, corporate jobs that just fucking are earning so much money? And then, like, you're like, oh, damn. And then you realize, no, actually, you're so much happier than them.
Yeah. Yeah, I have, like, pretty much all of my friends are, you know, work and, like, have good livings and have good jobs. And a lot of them are married, have kids, all this, you know. And I do think about that a little bit. Yeah. Like, it does cross my mind. Yeah. Just, like, I mean, just, like, the stability of something like that would be, like, nice. But I think as long as you're happy with, like the hustle component, which I think is the part that kind of gets the most like wears you down.
Yeah.
Is like when you're totally self-motivated.
Yeah.
Like just that you're always have to like to go, 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 go. Like that can wear you down. Where, I mean, if you have like a corporate job, you have that as well. It's just a little more stable, I guess. There's a, it's different.
Yeah. I think it's also your, if you're good at your job, you can pretty much guarantee your job stable.
Sure.
And you know that I earn this much money a year and I'm going to get this in my account and I can do this with that money.
Yeah.
I can buy a house. I can go on holiday, vacations, whatever. But also it's like you're selling your soul to the devil. And it's like, we can do what the fuck we want.
Yeah.
We have the best job.
I know. It's amazing.
It's like, if you want to play computer games, you can play computer games.
Yeah. Which I do.
Which you do. You do a lot. What? Where did that come from?
Because
I'm not judging you.
No.
It might sound like I'm judging you. No, but you do like niche things in everything.
Sure.
Everything you do. And I love it because it's like, I don't have any friends like that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean, apart from you. And I'd never really came across it from you. But like, I remember like, coming in at like 4 o'clock in the morning from a show and you watching some like gaming thing on TV. And I was like, this is wild to me. But then I've learned so much like living with you about it and I love it. But where did like explain this whole gaming stuff?
So
I still don't understand it.
For me, it was like, there's probably like two consistent things in my life. And that's like music and like games, you know, like my first memory is like getting a Nintendo on Christmas, an old NES. I think I was like 6 or something. And then it's like, oh my God.
Which one was that?
That's the one that that's the original up? Nintendo. Yeah, with the flip up. Looks like a toaster.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like that one. Do you still have it?
I have a Nintendo, but I don't have the one I had when I was a kid. Yeah. I did the thing where like I sold like I had a Nintendo and a Super Nintendo and a Genesis, all these games. And then like a stupid kid, I went to like they called it Funko Land, which is like EB Games now.
Okay, yeah.
I gave them all my shit and then they gave me a PlayStation. Which seemed like a good idea at the time.
Yeah, but, hindsight.
Yeah, but now it's like all those retro games are actually worth a lot of money now.
It's like Bitcoin, right?
Yeah,
it's
like, it's very collectible.
How many people have like spent God knows the amount of Bitcoin on buying drugs and then like over like 15 years ago, and now it's like would have been worth billions, but
anyway, you never know.
Yeah.
But yeah, so started there, and then like, you know, we got a computer in our house when I was pretty young, like it's like 9. It was like before Windows even. Yeah. Didn't even have Windows on it. It was like a DOS computer.
Okay. Well, so it was like the Matrix, just like green.
Yeah, you just had to type in everything you wanted.
Yeah.
And so then I started playing computer games like super young. And then, I don't know, I was like on the internet really early.
Yeah.
Like when that first started, and I was like super about it, like message boards and stuff. And then it just continued on. But I started playing like, you know, I got Doom when I was super young, and I was like, oh my God.
Doom
like
was classic.
First-person shooters, yeah, it's amazing. I got super into a thing called Counter-Strike, which was probably the first game I played online like a ton.
Yeah.
You know, and I was like, you know, playing constantly.
Is that still big, Counter-Strike?
It is, yeah.
They do big competitions for that, don't they?
And they still play like the older version that came out like, it's called Source. It's like, came out like 15 years ago, but they still use it
because
it's like balanced a certain way. It's like a sport.
Look terrible?
I mean, it doesn't look like the new shit, but it doesn't look awful. You know, it doesn't look like Doom or something.
Yeah, yeah.
But
Doom was terrible.
But yeah, so, and then like when I actually started producing, it was funny because one of the things that clicked for me was like, I have this like incredible PC that I built myself, super powerful PC. So I got Ableton and I could just run everything immediately. Yeah. Like it had no issues like running all this stuff.
Did you build the PC for gaming?
I did.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And then like the production was like, okay, I can do something like kind of productive with this PC rather than just, you know, play video games all day.
Yeah.
And then it would start. I would be like, okay, I'm going to spend this much time producing and then I will let myself like play stuff.
Yeah.
And then it pretty quickly turned into like gaming took like a super backseat for a really long time.
Yeah.
And I was just like, when I was like learning Ableton, it was like a complete, you know, obsession, you know, 5 to 6 hours a day, just like trial and error, writing really bad music.
How important do you think that was though? Because I think for me, I had like a 2-year period where I split up with my girlfriend.
Yeah.
I can remember 12 months, specifically just 12 months, definitely of I split up with my girlfriend at the time. And I used to go to the cinema once a week with my cousin. And then I was working full time as well. And I didn't really do anything apart from work, gym, write.
Yeah.
And didn't have any social life.
Didn't
have a girlfriend, didn't do anything. Just locked myself away. Was that something that kind of got you to the next level of production?
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
I think it was probably like 3 years before I actually wrote something where I was like, okay, this is like in the ballpark of what I'm going for.
Yeah.
You know, because I've always tried to be really honest with myself. Be like, you know, this isn't working and it's not working. But so, that like 3-year period of just, you know, writing hundreds of tracks, they're just like little
shit,
little things. Yeah. Trying to figure out why does this sound like shit? Why does that sound like shit? Like, how can I make my kicks sound a certain way? Da da da.
Yeah.
That was definitely invaluable. And I feel like everyone kind of has to go through that. Unless you're like taught, you know, which I know a lot of people take like classes in now, which I would think it would make that process shorter, you know, if you're like instructed.
I think it does, but I also think it depends on the person, but I think it also makes people a lot less, a lot more impatient.
Sure.
Because I think you're getting not necessarily impatient but less creative.
Yeah.
Because I think, I don't know about you, but during that learning process, because I went to school for music technology, but they taught us the bare minimum basics. Sure. So I knew how to like arrange and I knew how to put things in. But realistically, the bit that takes the time is the creativity side of it. But I think when you're trying to learn that, it kind of, and you're trying to speed that along, you lose that whole creativity of like finding who you are as an artist.
Sure.
Have you always written that style of music?
No, when I started, I actually thought I was going to make like IDM, you know, like Aphex Twin, Autechre, Boards of Canada, like trippy, like slow, like headphone music.
Yeah.
Like that's what I started trying to make. And then it kind of slowly like got more techno. But I think I was drawn to that because that was like the first kind of electronic stuff I liked. It's actually like really hard to make. It's hard to make that type of music because it's supposed to like sound kind of like old and, you know, shitty, but like in a good way. Mm. So it's kind of hard to just like not just make it sound bad, but like bad in a good way, you know?
Burial for me.
That
type of production where it's so lo-fi.
Yeah.
But it sounds great.
Right,
but awful. Also awful.
Yeah.
It's like...
intentionally.
Yeah. But I think a lot of that is like sample finding.
Yeah.
And then processing samples
at
the like the best. I don't know, it's weird. Because that first Burial album was unbelievable.
Yeah.
And it was all made from Metal Gear Solid samples.
Yeah, I was just about to say that. It's a little gaming tie-in. Yeah. He'd like... ripped like most of the samples from Metal Gear Solid. There's like a really cool wiki that has like the source of like every single sample on those first two albums.
Really?
And it's like, you know, pages and pages and pages and pages.
Have you seen the Resident Advisor thing that they did?
Don't think so. Probably.
They did one on it.
Oh, and yeah.
It's pretty much probably the wiki, but in.
Yeah, in like an article form. Yeah.
Yeah, video form. And they were like, yeah, you can hear everything. He sampled Beyonce as well. I don't know how he cleared that.
He sampled a lot of, maybe not a lot, but I know he sampled a few, like, you know, vocals from, like, big names. And like, pitch bend the shit out of them and stuff.
I love that.
Maybe he didn't clear it.
Maybe he didn't. I don't know. Is there, like, a point where the sample doesn't sound...
where it's so manipulated.
Where it's so different.
Yeah.
That you're like, no one's ever
fair use or something, maybe.
Yeah. Do you like using samples?
Yeah, I like samples. I like to like take a sample and like time stretch it a lot.
Yeah.
Like that's to make like pads and stuff. Like I've been working on my ambient project again.
Yeah, I've been listening to
it.
Sounds great.
It's like Erasier. It's third
nice.
Album. It's almost finished.
What's it called?
Erasier. That's the name of the artist. Yeah.
Okay, how do you spell that?
Araceae.
I love that you had to think about that.
But yeah, so I've been working on that. But so for example, you know, you take like a really long string sample or something and then just like time stretch the absolute shit out of it and like pitch it a certain way.
Yeah.
Put a ton of reverb on it, of course. And then like you get like these weird pad sounds that I think you could get those type of sounds with synthesis, but it has a different quality when it's a sample that you're working with.
Yeah, because I wonder if that's how they do it. With like Aphex and Burial and things like that, where they actually make the samples themselves.
Yeah.
And then resample it.
Probably. They probably have like a bank,
you
know, and they like record a bunch of stuff and then have like all these.
Yeah. Cause I know Aphex does a lot of modular stuff.
Yeah.
Right. So maybe he just spends months making modular sounds.
Probably.
And then re recording them in. It's something I'd love to like understand a bit more about modular synths because although you don't use hardware, you still kind of use modular.
Yeah, I use Reactor a lot. Yeah. The Reactor Blocks, which is their like kind of like modular system.
Yeah,
and it's just a modular, like in a VST.
Yeah.
But no, it's a lot of fun. I don't think I would want to build like an actual hardware modular. For one, it's like super expensive, and for two, it's like a little over my head.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
It would be nice to have like a little one. I've seen some live performers, they'll have just like a couple, you know, modular things, which that would be fun to have.
Yeah, I think it's like modular effects sometimes when you're live and things like that. Like, do you use any hardware effects?
No. No. I'm like all in the box.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's so easy. It must be so easy, like not having to worry about plugging shit in.
Yeah, when I was, you know what, when I played in bands and stuff, I had all this hardware, like all this guitar shit, like all these pedals, all these heads and stuff. And so I feel like I kind of went through my gear phase when I was there.
Yeah.
Most people go through their gear phase, you know, when they're making techno, so they buy all these synths and stuff. So I kind of like went through that phase. And then when I first started producing like techno stuff, I started buying stuff and realized it was, for me, it was actually kind of just like getting in the way a little bit.
I think it can do that. I think it can do both. For me, like I don't have any hardware in here.
Yeah.
But my place in the UK, I do. And it's nice for like, I'm trying to I've got a chord pattern.
Sure.
And then I want to just send it to a synth and just see what I can get out of that.
Yeah,
synth.
Yeah.
Or if I've got like a bass line and then I'm like, I want like a beefier bass line. Instead of me going in and processing everything, I just run it through the Moog.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is, it's kind of just lazy. Really? It's just like, well, the Moog's sitting there.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Like, it sounds great, so let's just run it through that. I would really like a like big polyphonic synth.
Sure.
Just like one that can do everything.
Yeah.
Really? That can... I only need that one.
Right,
really.
Yeah.
I do. I use a lot of drum machines back in the UK. Yeah, I have like...
What's your favorite?
The AVP. I'm really... It's like this... It's Russian handmade.
Okay.
It's so
it's like
Russian.
A boutique thing?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. They make them by hand and ship them out when they've built it, really.
Nice.
I think it's AVP. I can't remember the full name of it, but it looks... Russian as fuck. Like harsh corners.
Nice.
I like that one. And the Tansbar light I've got as well.
Okay.
The MFP light. That's really nice. But they're all very similar.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the thing is like, and also it's like when you've got hardware, you're like, well, I can get this in software now.
Sure,
it
sure.
It all sounds very similar. It's just, you just can't touch it.
Right. Yeah. If I had like a bunch of disposable income, I might buy a few pieces just to have.
Yeah.
You know, I'd really like to have a, it's funny, like a Latin percussion, the Roland.
Yeah.
I actually use those sounds a lot, like in Ableton, like the shaker and like the clav and a couple other ones in there. But those old Roland drum machines, I feel like would be really cool to have. Even though they're super emulated and, you know, you can buy like emulated ones. Yeah. But
Yeah, the remakes that they're doing are pretty good
as
well.
Yeah.
The small ones. I do want to get an SP-1200.
Yeah, that'd be nice.
It'd be dope. But they're so expensive.
Yeah, how much are they?
I don't know, but it wouldn't surprise me if they're like over a grand.
Yeah,
for like,
pretty expensive.
It's expensive when you can just get all the sounds yourself.
Sure.
And I don't even know if there's MIDI on it.
Yeah.
So you're like, you've got to get CV and then convert it to MIDI and then, ugh.
Yeah, for me, it's like a lot of times it's hard to justify the expense because I'm pretty like, I'm like kind of like that with everything where it's like, do I actually need that? Like, am I actually going to, like, use that a bunch?
I think that's, like, one of the best things, though, to have in life. Because it's like, well, the clear example, when we, before Victoria, your girlfriend, moved in, the house was just fucking minimalist. It's like, we don't buy shit. But I think that it kind of goes into that artist side of thing. And it's like, let's just stick with what we need.
Exactly.
And what helps us survive and makes do, because there's so many people that buy so much shit and then never use it.
Yeah.
And that's in life, right?
Yeah.
Like clothes, everything. You just like, it's the same with music. I think sometimes it's that saying, all the gear, no idea.
Sure.
And it's not, that's kind of all pretty disrespectful, but I've got friends that are like extremely successful producers.
Yeah.
And they start having money and then start buying a load of gear and then never use it. And
you're
like, why are you buying it?
Yeah.
Like, you buying it just for your Instagram
stories. Instagram photo. It's a good background for your picture.
Great background. But it's like, you can only do that a couple of times.
Yeah.
I don't know. I guess people can spend their money on what they want, really.
Yeah, it definitely goes both ways. Like, I know I know plenty of people who are just like wizards, yeah. you know, and they just have like all this hardware and they know exactly how to use all of it. But I've never been that type of person.
I'm jealous of those.
I know, me too. That's the thing. It's like, that's another reason I don't have a bunch of gear. It's just I know I'm going to get lost in it. And like, I'll probably learn to use it eventually, but I'm just so quick with how I have like a process.
Yeah.
And it works really well. And I haven't really felt the need to like change it up a ton to where I'm like adding hardware to it. Because there's like so many VSTs and sounds you can get.
Yeah. I did an interview with Andy McDougall, who's he's my mastering engineer.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what happened with him is he worked out how to master without hardware.
Nice.
And that's kind of how his whole business came out of it.
Sure.
It was because he didn't need the expense of the hardware of what all the big studios is. So like a big studio costs, let's say, $150 for a master.
Yeah.
But you're not actually paying for the master. You're paying for their rent and you're paying for their hardware.
Right, the overhead.
And you're paying for the mortgage that they've spent on their desk and stuff like that. Whereas he can charge $50.
Right.
And you're like, well, that makes sense
for
everyone. Because we are also in a day and age where you make fuck all money from producing music.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. It's like why am I spending
even more so for you for streaming on techno like that. Like
I make literally nothing for streaming. Like I get a check once a year and it's like, you know, $20 or something on a good year for streaming.
Yeah.
There was one time Blawan and Luke Slater both played one of my tracks on their BBC sessions, like on separate occasions.
Oh, you got some money then.
Yeah, that I was like, wow, a check for that's like actual money. I mean, it was like $200 bucks or something, but it was a lot for like one play.
Yeah, yeah.
It kind of makes you think about, you know, what things used to be like. Like I was talking to a friend of mine, developer, he was in town this weekend. And he was talking about like Trezor, like they used to sell like, you know, 30,000 copies of a record. And that was like normal. Yeah. You know, they had like a warehouse and it's like all this stuff. Yeah. And now it's like you press
300,
you sell them all if you're lucky. If you press 500, you're like, oh, yeah, I'm really going to town. Yeah, like 500 records.
And you're worried.
Yeah,
you're
exactly.
Shaking because you can't sell 500. Yeah. They must have made so much money back in the day.
Yeah. I think they had a pretty big, a lot of those like, things like that had a pretty big, you know, umbrella of things they were doing, like the venue, the label, like all this stuff. We're now a record label now is like, it's totally a passion project, right? Almost all the time. Like it might help you get a couple gigs here and there, but it's definitely like a labor of love, right?
Yeah, because it still costs.
Yeah, and it still costs money. Like, yeah, you might not be making money, but you're still spending money on it.
Yeah, and that's the thing is like, with like Spotify, like a million streams generates about $3,500, $4,000.
Right.
A million streams. Like, let's say that's 10,000 people listening to it.
Right.
And they all listen to it 10 times. Is that right?
Math, I don't know.
Whatever that is, even whatever. So that would be like 10,000 record sales.
Yeah.
10,000 records is a lot.
That's a lot.
It's a lot.
Yeah. That's like an enormous record. That's like a record of the year territory.
Yeah. Like, and imagine you're making, what would you be making on a record that sells for $10?
Like digital?
No, like.
Oh, like actual vinyl? On vinyl. Probably like $4, something like that.
Yeah. You're making 40 grand.
Yeah.
For like one record.
Right.
And you do that 4 or 5 times a year.
Yeah.
You're making a shit ton of money.
And it was like that until, like, what, the early 2000s or something?
Until, what was it? Not LimeWire. What was the guy's name?
Napster.
Motherfucker. That was the first one.
Which I was all over now. I was like,
of course you were, because you're a computer geek.
Yeah. I was like, oh my God. I will say, though, I discovered so much music I never would have known existed, like, when I first got Napster, because I was like, I was a teenager. I can't remember my exact age, but it was like, oh, what's this? And I still bought music at the time, you know. But it's definitely killed. It probably would have gone that way eventually. Like, I don't think the record label model they were using was sustainable at all.
No.
Like, have you seen the things where it shows how much they were charging people for
CDs? Yeah.
Like, and they were spending, like, 50 cents on a CD and charging, like, $20.
Yeah.
Like, that type of shit.
Yeah,
it's, like, crazy.
You'd buy an album for, like, 20 quid. Or, like, $15.99 was, like, an... I remember in the UK, like, £15.99 was, like, the one.
It's like a CD.
Yeah, and then a compilation would be, like, 20 to 25.
Yeah.
And you're like, I know there was a lot more money in, like, sync, like mechanical syncs and things like that. And they'd have to pay more out. But the manufacturing of a CD is fucking pennies.
Yeah. It's, like, literally nothing.
I was in a car. I was in Austin the other day, and my mates drove me somewhere, and they had a CD player in their car.
Nice.
And I was like, this is old school. Like, even laptops. Does your computer have a CD?
Mine does. Yeah. A lot of them don't. I got mine, like, intentionally. They had, like, a DVD rewritable just to have it. But, I mean, most computers don't.
They don't need it.
Yeah. Even if you're installing, like, an OS, you just use a USB now. It's like, you don't need that. Because that's why people used to have a disk drive was... Yeah. You know, install, like, operating systems and stuff, but you don't even need that anymore.
I just realized that OS stands for operating system. My mind is blown. Which makes sense why Apple's all iOS, because it's...
Yeah, yeah.
Never knew
that. You just
that.
Made the galaxy brain connection. Just, mind blown.
Jesus Christ. Somewhere in my electronic of the brain. Mind blown. Wow. Do you like living in Detroit?
I do, yeah. I like it. It's cold right now. I don't like the cold.
I love the cold.
You love it?
I'm so happy it's colder now.
I will say I do like this type of weather over, like, you know, it's like super hot. I don't like the heat at all. I'm like super summer's pale. Don't cold. Like the sun.
We're both a bunch of white boys.
But no, Detroit's nice. It's got cool spots to go. The venue situation seems a little dire. It doesn't seem like there's a ton of venues.
It's weak, isn't it?
Yeah.
I really want to open a club here.
Yeah. I remember, we talked about that a bit. You had the idea for, like, the space that would have, like,
I'd
creative spaces in it as well and stuff.
If I had, like, a couple of million.
Yeah. You definitely need, like, a big investment to do something like that.
And I think the thing is that it's creating something that brings the whole community together rather than just alienating, like, the dance, the electronic community.
Sure.
If that makes sense. I think for a good enough business, you need something that allows live music, electronic music, and kind of hip hop, Hispanic, and everything like that.
Yeah.
Because there's all those communities here that need that kind of venue.
Absolutely.
But it amazes me that no one's done it.
Yeah.
To be fair. Because there's so many buildings for sale.
Yeah. There's so much property. What's that venue that just opened up
Spotlight.
Recently? Spotlight.
It's great.
That place is cool.
It's really good.
Yeah.
And
I like it. It has, like, an arts space feel to it.
Yeah.
Rather than just, like, you know, a club or whatever.
It's really good, and I really want to do a party there, but I think they have, like, alienated themselves to a certain genre.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the thing that I struggle with like, you've got to make, like, that space is beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
they've done a really good job, and I'm just like, put different music in there.
Sure.
Like, put super techno, put house, put tech house, put whatever, put funk and soul.
Yeah.
Put, like, rap battles on, like, do everything.
Yeah.
But they don't.
Yeah.
I don't know why. There must be a reason why.
Right.
Have you been there?
I've been there once, yeah.
It's dope. It's really
cool. I liked
it,
yeah.
It's a really nice vibe as well, because I think in the day they open it up as, like, a cafe kind of thing, so people can go and work and
yeah,
stuff like that.
Yeah, I like the room.
Yeah.
The room's cool. The
room's a perfect club.
Yeah.
It's perfect.
I like the skateboards and stuff on the wall are cool.
Yeah.
And then, like, all the records and stuff are cool.
It's great. And you can buy everything in there.
Yeah.
They have the record store in there as well.
Right.
It'd be cool if they did food.
That would be nice. That would be the I think they probably do like a food truck or something. That's what most places do that don't want to have a kitchen.
They have right? a food. They have food people outside.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know if enough people go to make it work for sure. every day of the week, if that yeah. makes sense.
That's probably like a huge amount of money on top of whatever else. Kitchens. To have like a kitchen, yeah. it's probably like...
And then you got to deal with like the food house.
Sure, sure. Like,
yeah, more insurance.
yeah.
America's crazy with insurance.
That's where that $2 to $3 million investment comes from. That's what
that's pretty much it, yeah. But you yeah. also have to almost own the venue because you know how Detroit's going.
Oh, like, yeah.
The minute you make... Because what venues make areas hot.
Yeah.
I think if you put a venue down in 5 years' time, people are going to be living around there.
Yeah.
And if you don't own the venue, that venue's going to be turned into apartments.
That's what happened to the Works.
Yeah.
That's literally what happened. Yeah. yeah.
And... The Works, damn, that place.
yeah. Like, the Works was there forever, and then, like, slowly the area around it built up. More, like, complaints came in, you know, about the venue. Like, people were always complaining about it. And then I think they just, whoever owned the property just decided not.
Yeah.
They didn't even offer them to be able to re-up the lease because they didn't want the venue there anymore. So makes it's like, sense. What do you do?
And also, that was a health hazard, that place.
the Works was special. It was a special place.
I remember playing there on a movement after party years ago.
Yeah.
And, like, you have to, like, dodge, like, little bricks coming from the ceiling. but it was fun.
I definitely played a lot where there were, like, I'd be, like, dust. Moving my stuff because yeah. it would drip.
Yeah.
There was, like, one time there was, like, dripping water. I was like, ooh. Move my push.
Literally only in Detroit that would happen. Yeah. That's why I love this place.
Right.
Like, I've learned to really enjoy it, especially yeah. over the last month. I've, like, really
for
started
sure.
enjoying living here a bit more. I think it's just I've just been experiencing more of the city a little bit.
Of course.
It's definitely an interesting place.
Yeah. If you know where to look.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
You go, like, off the beaten path.
That's the thing is, like, there's so much space here.
Yeah.
And there's so much to do. It would be really interesting to see if you could get like a bunch of artists together to invest in something. But then that's the thing. It goes back to what you're saying with the bands. It's like
sure.
when you got a bunch of people doing it.
Yeah.
You're just kind of like.
Then you have like a board. you know, yeah. you have like all these people yeah, you have to like run stuff by.
Run stuff by everyone. And it's like, it's just not worth it.
Right.
And it's also to get investors to invest into Detroit. It's
yeah.
It's just sad, but it's. The city's just, there's not much to offer.
If sure.
that makes sense. As is like, would you rather invest in New York or Detroit? Well, there's 12 million people in New York
yeah.
and 500,000 in New York. In Detroit, it's like, well, where do we make the most money?
Right, yeah. Which is what, someone who's going to invest like that, that's like what they're thinking.
Yeah.
Unless they're trying to like do something that's not about money.
Money.
Which who's.
Who isn't when it comes to investing?
Yeah, only artists do that.
yeah, we're the only stupid. That's why none of us have money.
right, yeah.
But I think it surprised me that some of the older guys haven't.
Yeah.
Like, invested into a place. Godfather did.
Yeah.
He has his club downtown, but it's, like, super commercial.
They have the Underground Resistance shop that's been there forever.
Yeah, that's in Indian Market.
I think so.
Is it Indian Market?
I'm not sure exactly. I can't remember exactly where it
I've
is.
Never been in there.
It's so bad with geography.
Is it cool?
Yeah, it's really cool.
Is it always
like small,
open?
But no, you have to make an appointment.
Okay.
But usually like it's like super active movement time because obviously people yeah. are coming into town and everyone wants to like make an appointment, check it out.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think you can make an appointment anytime.
What are they selling there?
Just like all the old Underground Resistance records.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. Bunch of other stuff.
We should go down there.
Yeah, we should. It'd be fun. It.
Yeah, that'd be fun.
I've been there once, and it was like the second year I came to Movement or something. It was like 2014. So it's been a long time.
Yeah, that'd be dope. I think that's the thing is like, it's so perfect. Detroit's such a perfect city to like grow something.
For sure.
Because it's so cheap.
Yeah, it's that's so where cheap. The opportunity's at, I feel like.
Yeah.
That people overlook. And it's probably because you have to put, like, a lot into it, you know.
It is. But you know my mate Troy.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
He's, like, opened a club. He used to own Grasshopper.
Yeah.
But he rented that.
And yeah.
That was kind of, like, the sticking point of owning not owning the venue is you can't do what you want with it.
Sure.
And then you got to deal with that monthly payment every month. Like, and we all know, like, even if you take mortgages out, you still have that monthly payment, but it's yours at the end of the day. And
right.
If shit hits the fan, you can sell the building.
Yeah.
But he's got a super gangster club now.
Nice.
It's like super hood. It's making a killing.
That's cool, though.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah.
And there's people. People want it. And I think that's the thing is, I think if you gave somebody, I think maybe like a 800 capacity venue.
Yeah.
That can be scaled down. Like,
right.
Maybe like two rooms. Like one 400 cap.
Yeah.
And one like 800.
Yeah.
And then you can have a night of, you could have a bigger night if you need
sure.
it, if you know what I mean.
You could have like lots of nights that were just the 400 room. Yeah. And then
kind of like what TV Lounge does with
sure.
the patio.
Yeah.
But I think we need like a better inside venue.
Yeah. Tangent's kind of like that, where they have the gallery room and then they have like the big main room. But yeah, I think that's like definitely the way to do it.
Mm. I've never been to Tangent.
Tangent's cool. Last time I went, they had like a big shop set up in the gallery room though. So I don't know if they're using that as like a live space right now. But they have like a big outdoor area you can do stuff, which is cool.
I think that's the cool thing is to have something that's very community based, where it's not just a nightclub.
I'm pretty sure they own it. I'm pretty sure it's been like the same owners forever.
Yeah.
And that part of town is still, there's not a ton of like houses around.
Yeah.
So I don't think they're in trouble like the way like the works, you know,
was.
Which, if they own the building, I mean, they can do what they want.
Do what they want.
Right.
Yeah. Until the city.
As long as the cops don't get involved. Yeah.
But the cops aren't going to care. Right. Let's be honest. Yeah. Do you see yourself staying in Detroit for like a long time? Or
Probably for a few years. Yeah. Mm. I don't know where else. Well, when I kind of before the pandemic hit, I had plans to move to Berlin.
Yeah.
That I felt like I was getting pretty close to like making happen. But, you know, pandemic obviously put a stop to that, and Germany's still pretty rough as far as
it's just gone back into lockdown, hasn't it?
Yeah.
Well, when this comes out on the 30th of November, I think.
Yeah.
So maybe it might. I think it's still going to be locked down.
Yeah, because I know Berghain opened up for like a couple weeks, and I haven't seen if they're staying open. But I mean, lockdown, they can't. Like, you have to close businesses at like 10 p.m. or something like that. So
yeah, it's only like restaurants are allowed to stay open, and clubs are completely not.
Yeah. So it's almost like, yeah, so probably won't be moving to Berlin anytime soon, which is sad. I love Berlin.
Yeah,
like,
it's a beautiful city.
I've been there like four or five times now.
Would you move though? Is that still on the cards in future?
Yeah. I mean, I'd like to eventually.
Yeah.
It's an awesome city.
Yeah.
And for the type of stuff I play, there's a little more opportunity. Well, not right now because of COVID, but, you know, in general, that's kind of where that sound, because there's a lot of crews that, you know, throw parties where my kind of sound fits.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
But there's just like so many more in Europe, and Europe's so like close together.
It's easy.
There's
to
more
fly.
Opportunity,
yeah, yeah.
Right. Like all the festivals there, or not all, but there's a lot of festivals that are like that kind of music and stuff. Where here, there's really
movement,
and then there's like one in LA that's kind of or San Diego, I can't remember. But
Crossed,
maybe, I'm not sure.
Is it like a big commercial one?
I think Paula Temple played there. I saw.
Yeah, Crossed. I think.
Oh, okay. So
Cross,
it's not
Cross Festival.
I saw Paula Temple play there. I'm like, oh, they play like, that's weird.
Yeah, they those guys are really interesting.
Yeah.
I played for them a bunch. They're amazing. They have like built a brand up where they always sell out their festival and all their shows. So they can book who the fuck they want, and they can book super cool lineups.
That's cool. Yeah.
And they're like probably it's my second or first favorite festival in America. Just how it's curated and how it kind of really helps educate people on different genres and kind of different niches of genres and subgenres. It's really interesting.
Yeah, that's a cool way to do it, and to like experiment, but be a little more adventurous maybe with a couple of your bookings is cool.
Yeah, it's nice. I played with Jerry Beltram like in the summer.
Yeah,
and, like,
legend.
Yeah, absolute legend. I think I've got him on the podcast soon.
Nice. It'll
be really interesting. But yeah, it's, you wouldn't have thought Jerry Beltram would be playing on a festival to a bunch of 20, 18, 21 year olds.
Right.
Like, he's back in from the 90s, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. Were people into it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's the thing is festivals that do that kind of really help push the industry on and kind of really
sure.
help like educate, especially in America, because the scene got lost here. For years,
yeah.
Right. It kind of got taken away by and got taken over by hip hop and rock.
Yeah.
And it seems to be doing pretty well now.
For sure. And now it's like all in my genre, it's like all the artists who used to like, you know, you try to book them here in the States and they'd be like, oh, well, I'm not, you know, yeah. I'm not taking any dates in America. I'm not playing there. Now everyone's trying to come here and play. It's like the shoe's on the other foot because it used to be the opposite. Like everyone would be trying to go to Europe and play and stuff.
It's interesting. I think COVID's helped with that. And I don't mean that. I don't say that COVID's a good thing, but America's open.
Yeah.
And it's not fucking closing down as well.
Right.
So artists need to earn money.
Yeah.
And in America they can.
Yeah.
But I think it's great for the American scene. I think it needs it.
Sure.
I think it needs people moving out here and kind of spending more time here and playing kind of not it sounds really condescending by saying educating, but it is.
Yeah.
In the grand scheme of things, isn't it? It's like getting promoters to like really build proper crews and proper fan bases rather than worrying about booking big headliners.
Yeah.
I think that's important.
Yeah. I think like maybe since it's like things are just opening up a bit, like people are booking a little more conservatively.
Yeah.
Like just to like get their thing to back.
Money back.
Yeah. Yeah. Get like a little stability and then like maybe start experimenting a bit, because that's probably like, I mean, I'm not a promoter, I don't really throw parties, but that's probably like on their list of concerns, it's probably pretty low as far as like you know, having like something cool or whatever. They're probably just like trying to not go out of business.
Would you ever start your own night here?
Maybe. I did a night in Kansas City.
Yeah.
Just it was like smaller, but just a lot of work. We do like a party every year at Tangent.
For movement,
like the Friday night of Movement. And we like usually go all out. And that's like enough for me.
Yeah, yeah.
Planning like one party a year, because it's like, it's a lot of work. Yeah. And it is like bigger than like a normal party. So it's more logistics.
Yeah.
You know, it's like four or five headliners, you know, you have to deal with. But I don't know. I think having a night would be, it is a very like, cool thing to do like creatively,
because
you can explore things that are, you know, I think as artists we kind of get in our own like bubble,
totally.
You know, insulated,
yeah.
Whereas if you start having your own night, you can really experiment a lot more,
yeah,
because you're bringing in like these new people into like create something you're trying to create.
Yeah, I think it also allows you to kind of give something back to the community.
Sure.
Because I think if you're going at it with like a DJ artist kind of vibe, you're not necessarily booking the people that you would book as a promoter.
Yeah.
Because you're obviously you need to make money, but you're not like, it's not your full-time job.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I mean? And just like having a cool crew and just throwing a bunch of parties could be, I thought about it here.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss. There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
But it's just also Detroit's so small.
Yeah.
That it's hard. It's easy to get boring in Detroit if,
sure.
if you're doing something consistently.
Yeah.
It's not like New York where you have loads of people that 1 week they don't come and the next week they do. And
right.
there's enough people to do both. In Detroit, if you're doing a weekly party or even a monthly party, you need somebody, you need the same crew to come every time.
Absolutely. And the scene's like, as far as like people, like it's pretty small.
Super small.
Like even like we're like a little different genre wise, but you know, you go to parties, you see like the same
people. Yeah.
A lot of the same, which is cool to see like people supporting like all this different stuff. But it kind of shows you that there's not like a huge base of people to draw from. Yeah, so yeah, you could, it'd be the type, I feel like it'd be the type of thing where it's like, oh, I'm starting a monthly. The first month would be awesome.
Yeah.
Second month, third month, it'd be like completely dead. It's like,
it's so weird.
I can see it in my mind right now.
It's so weird because I was talking to Chuck from Paxhow about that and he said they've done that and it's exactly that.
Yeah, it's hard. It's like to keep people invested and excited about the night and everything, you know.
I think you could do something interesting where it's like a monthly party in a, if you had a big enough following where like I initially wanted to do it like this where you had each month was a different venue.
Yeah.
Like illegal.
Sure.
Legal, whichever, like wherever. Like sometimes 50 people, sometimes 1,000 people.
Yeah.
Like I like that concept of it. It's a secret lineup. It's a secret party. I think people would buy into that and you could build something really interesting with that.
Yeah.
But I also think you need a good team to...
Sure.
To execute that.
Yeah, it's a good model. I like that model. It's you could just have an email list.
Yeah.
Like no social media.
Yeah.
Just have like a mail list of like all these people. DVS1 does something like that in Minneapolis to where it's like email only and it's like invite only type thing. Or if you want to go, like someone has to vouch for you, that type of thing.
That's so cool.
Yeah. And I mean, he can do it, of course, because he's like a legend. And they've been, that scene in Minneapolis is like very close-knit and like it's like very well developed, and I think he has like a dedicated space where they do it, but to be able to do something like that would be really cool. But you know, think about how long it took him to like build that up. It was probably like years and years and years and years,
and also like it's it's who's going to your parties. In Detroit, it's still quite a young crowd.
Yeah.
Right. And I think in situations like that, like he's been around for so long that it's probably a bit of an older crowd.
Yeah. And people will travel for it.
Exactly.
Which and is big.
He's been in Minneapolis for ever.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah.
Like his whole life, he's been around there. And, but I think Detroit, you could definitely do something with that.
You could. I think so.
It's just finding somebody that gets the concept.
Yeah.
And isn't in the concept to make money out of it. It's just like, let's just throw a fucking sick party.
Yeah. It's like $20.
Yeah.
You don't know who's playing.
Yeah.
And you just go because you trust.
Oh, man, I love that. I'm like, I don't know if I'm one of these, sound like an old man, but it's like back in the day, if you know what I mean, it was so much better. And I'm not saying that, but it feels like that's, like I remember the free parties where you'd have to text to get an address,
to
get a number, and then you'd call the number and get the address.
Info line.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm like, we did that with one of our parties in Detroit, and it worked. The one you played.
Yeah, yeah,
We did that, and we were like, you buy tickets, and you get a text number, and then you text the number, and you get the address sent to you.
Yeah.
Like, it worked.
Yeah.
We sold, like, 400 tickets.
Right.
And it was a bit different where we had like the lineup was kind of announced,
sure.
But still like the secret location is a step there.
Yeah.
It's just doing it on a regular.
Right.
And how to keep that going.
Yeah.
Oh, I really want to do it.
Yeah.
I really want to do it. I don't know though. It's educating the customers though.
Sure.
As well, because I don't think anyone knows that era, if you know what I mean, that's going partying.
Yeah, they'd really have to like trust whatever the crew was
exactly.
or the party series. So it would be a gradual process,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
So, and that's the type of thing where it could be a different venue each time. So the first time you do it, you could get like 100,
yeah,
100 max capacity little spot at the Russell or something, and then see how it goes, and then it word of mouth spreads, and then the next time 200 people, maybe, you know.
You got to be willing to lose a bit of cash as well.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
Because you're
up front.
Because it's going to cost money to put on. But even if you got to the point where you're just covering your costs each party.
Yeah.
It could be so cool.
Yeah. But at the same time, I kind of just want to like sit in the basement and write tracks. That's what it comes down to for me.
Yeah. It's sometimes just easier to just to like do that, isn't it?
Yeah.
Which is why promoters are promoters and not producers or DJs.
Yeah, yeah, because you have to be, like, super... Well, I mean, not that they don't love the music, but you have to have a business mindset about it. First, maybe not first and foremost, but that has to be at least, like,
first
or second thing you're thinking about.
Yeah.
Where I'm just like, oh, this guy made awesome track. I'm going to book this guy.
Does
anyone know who he is? I don't know.
Yeah, totally.
The track's awesome.
Yeah, and it's also, like... No one gives a fuck about the lineup.
At the end of the day, people just like want to go to the party.
Which is so hard nowadays to kind of have a party that's not about the lineup.
Sure.
It's about the vibe.
Yeah.
We don't have it anymore.
Yeah.
There's very small amount of places that or promoted crews. Like, I know there's clubs that do that. Like, maybe Trezor, maybe Bagayan. Those institutions, if you know what I mean, where people just go in just to experience the club. But I can imagine even then there's busy nights and quiet nights.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
It's not all like...
And when there's a massive lineup, it's
slammed
out the door all weekend. Yeah.
Yeah.
So the lineup does matter. But I think you do have, for something like that, you do have this base amount of people you can always count on because it's at this venue or it's this crew doing it, which is like big. Because then you're free to make more, you know, you're free to experiment a bit if you have like this base amount of people you can count on, right?
I think in Detroit, there's probably only like maximum 6,000 people. Maximum. Like I'd say on a regular basis, 4,000 people that are partying every weekend.
Right.
In our genre of music.
Sure.
In the electronic kind of realms.
Yeah, I wonder what the amount of, like, unique amount of people that go out, like, once a month. Like, I wonder what that number is, like.
Yeah, because I 4,000 people is still a lot.
Yeah.
Thinking about it. Like, if you think Magic Stick, what's the capacity of Magic Stick? 800?
Something like that, yeah.
TV Lounge is, like, 450.
Yeah.
What's Tangent?
Tangent's probably like 450.
450.
I mean, it's a bigger venue, but they don't do like huge things a lot.
So 450, then
Marble Bar.
Marble Bar, what's that?
Probably about the same.
Yeah. And then that's it, really.
Yeah.
And then you got the big shows at Russell.
Sure.
When they happen.
Which is like once a month, once every 2 months, something like that.
Yeah, 2,000-3,000.
And when that happens,
everything else is fucked.
No one's. So it's not like you have all these. Well, you do have new people only go that, but then like all the other parties are probably
struggling
a lot.
Yeah.
Because I would say like on any given weekend, there's probably only like, you know, one or two parties that 100%. Do like really well or, you know, everyone else probably struggles a bit.
Yeah. Because again, it's a poorer city, isn't it? It's people don't have that much expendable cash as if you lived in New York or
plus COVID and everything. Yeah. And once people's like unemployment ran out, that made a big marker on people who are like spending on what they see as like extraneous, going out, you know.
Yeah, totally. And of course, Detroit is going to get it's the first city to kind of go down anyway, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's like, although it's definitely gone up since I've been living here.
Sure.
Have you noticed a difference?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's like, it's quite a bit better than when I first moved here, I feel like. There's like, just like more stuff to do. There's a lot of places opening up. It's just hard to tell because like COVID is such like a once in a lifetime thing. It's hard to like judge like what is because of that and what is because of like, oh, it's Detroit.
Yeah.
You know? But in a general sense, I feel like it's done about as good as it can.
Yeah.
Like Michigan as a state, like dealt with COVID pretty well, I feel. One of the more like they had a lot of like Good Measures. Like Missouri, where I'm from, was awful. Like, like so bad. Like as far as how they dealt with it. But so yeah, I think Detroit's doing pretty good. I don't know.
I think the thing is with COVID and a place like Detroit is like, it couldn't really get much worse, like as a city, right? It's great. It was good beforehand and it was growing, but like it's gone through the fucking shitter like over the years, over the last like 40 years. Detroit's gone through,
it's gone through a lot,
a lot. And I think it's very clear when something else bad happens, it's like, well, we've experienced something. Even though they haven't experienced COVID, no one has, but it's like, this is still pretty similar.
I mean?
And it's like you've all gone through hard times, and I think you'd learn to live with hard times.
Yeah, it's not our first go. It's not Detroit's first go around,
no,
you know?
Not at all, which is it's interesting.
So maybe it even dealt with it like better than a lot of places, you know?
Maybe. I think that's it as well, is like the community here is it's a different community.
Sure.
Because it's so small.
Yeah.
For a major city.
Yeah.
What would be classed as a major city. It's interesting. I like it here.
You plan on staying here very much longer?
I'm looking elsewhere.
Yeah, I'm
looking elsewhere. And then I'm like, do I just like change neighborhoods?
Sure.
But for me, is like, I want to have a place where all my family can come.
Yeah.
And like I've got nieces and nephews. What it is, what the thing that I struggle with the most is when I come from here to the UK and back, like my whole life from the UK just stops.
Yeah.
And I don't see anyone.
Right. Yeah.
So like I don't see my family sometimes for like 3-4 months.
Sure.
And like some of my closest friends, I don't see them for 3-4 months, which is fine. Like, we have technology that I can see them, but it's,
it's not the same.
It's not the same. And like my niece and nephews, my brother and my sister, like everyone's getting older.
Yeah.
Right? And like my parents are getting older, and it's like at this point in my career where we're like still growing, and obviously we're always still growing, but it's like, I have to fucking hustle now.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Now's the hustle time, and kind of hopefully set me up to the point where I want to be.
Right.
And I really want my friends from the UK and my family from the UK to be able to experience that as well.
Yeah.
So this might offend people, and I'm sorry if it does, but Detroit isn't the place to bring my family.
Yeah.
If you know what I mean. It's like, I've been looking at Austin. I love that city. There's just more to give as a city. So yeah. Or do I go somewhere else in Michigan? If you know what I mean. Do I go a little bit north? But yeah, I don't know. Where else would you live in America?
In America, I mean, I love Kansas City. It's like where my whole family is.
Well, that's the thing.
Always
it's home.
An option. Yeah, it's home.
It's home.
Like, I go through the same type thing where, I mean, it's not a different country, but I don't see them very often. You know, when I live there, I'd see them every weekend. But I mean, I really like, I like Seattle a lot.
Yeah.
I like Denver a lot, which will never happen because my girlfriend lived in Denver and she hates it. I'd hate it if I lived there. I love the mountains and stuff.
The mountains are beautiful. Denver itself is beautiful.
Yeah.
I couldn't live there.
Yeah.
As a city, I think there's more in Detroit.
Sure.
Which is going to offend the whole of
Now you're offending everybody.
Fuck you.
I don't think I would want to live in New York City. It's like, New York City is a good place to visit.
Yeah.
Maybe that's how people feel about Detroit, but that's how I feel about New York. Like, I like visiting it, but it's like, just like, I don't want to live in like a box, you know, and like walk down the street and like it just like smells bad. I mean, even people love Detroit will acknowledge that. Like in the summertime, you walk down the street and it's just like, oh my God.
Yeah. I would, if I had the money to buy a place that was nice in New York, I would move there tomorrow.
Sure. Yeah.
I love it. But yeah, I get that.
The thing I like, I do like the transit. Like, I like the transit system. That's why I like Berlin so much, because their public transit's so like, anywhere I can live where I don't need a car is like a plus for me.
So pretty much you got to leave America.
Pretty much, yeah. It's pretty, like, maybe Chicago, New York.
Yeah.
Everything else is kind of like, you need a car.
I was thinking of, I've been looking at Chicago.
Yeah.
Because I like seasons. I like weather seasons.
Sure.
And Chicago gets, you get that.
Oh, yeah.
Chicago's
nice.
Chicago's really nice.
Mm-hmm.
Really nice. And you can, it's pretty much the same cost as Austin now.
Yeah.
Austin's like LA prices. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, I don't know.
Yeah, I hear Austin's like the next San Francisco as far as like just tech. Insane, yeah. Like, how are people even like affording to live here type prices?
Dude, I looked at some houses and you're like 800 grand for a 3-bedroom, like single story.
Yeah.
But the bedrooms are like the same size of our fucking bathroom.
Right.
And you're like, what? Like, who in their mind is spending this much money?
Yeah.
On something that you're just like, this is just pointless.
Right. I feel like most people spending that money are just like buying it and flipping it and then buying it. Like,
that's
like a never-ending cycle.
That's what it feels like.
Or buying it for an Airbnb. It's like a big thing.
Yeah, that's what it looks like. And
that's one of the reasons it costs so much to live places is because people buy property and no one lives. Like, they just like reuse it for Airbnb or whatever, which it's like, I don't know what to do about that. But it's,
and then it makes a shortened kind of property market and no one can really get, and there's not enough space.
Right.
You know what
it's
I mean?
Like, why would I buy this house and rent it to someone for this amount of money when I can put it on Airbnb and make that much money in a weekend?
Yeah.
So everyone's doing that math and it's like, oh, this is what I'm going to do. And then
it's like, just, you're right. I got friends that do it in the UK.
Yeah.
That just buy houses and Airbnb them.
Right.
It's great business.
Yeah.
If that's your plan. Fucks the city. But.
Yeah. It's like, I find it hard to like blame anyone individually for doing that, but it does make it a lot harder for people to find a place to live
that
is decent.
Well, that's what happened in Toronto, wasn't it? There was like huge Asian investment.
Mm-hmm.
So what would happen is you'd have somebody from China buy like 3 or 4 apartments and not even rent them out.
Yeah.
Not even Airbnb them, just have them sit in there.
Right.
And they were doing it as like a tax break, because there wasn't any extra tax that the Canadian government put onto them.
Yeah.
And then it made like a housing crisis because there's no fucking houses for anyone.
It's just like money laundering.
Yeah.
Right. It's pretty much what
literally. So now I think the Canadian government's like charging like 20, 25% tax.
Yeah.
But
should be illegal.
It should be really.
They should have like rent. I know Berlin has pretty good renters rights, I think.
Yeah.
They do have Airbnb there, but it's some, I can't remember what the exact logistics of it is, but you have to like, maybe it's like you have to own the home or something to where not just anyone can like Airbnb or whatever. Yeah.
The Berlin's still pretty affordable. It's expensive. It's a lot more
affordable.
Expensive.
It's really hard to find a place to live. Like people I know who have moved there, like have a really hard time finding a place to live, just like finding a spot because a lot of people are moving there. I don't know what that situation's like, you know, post-COVID, but that's been my experience of knowing people who moved to Berlin is it's like, you know, they'll live in a tiny apartment and then they're trying to find something else and they just can't find anything.
Yeah.
Or they're living with like 2 other people and trying to find a spot, but it's just like, because everyone wants to live like in this one area.
Yeah. Yeah. But I guess you could live a bit further out. But
you could.
I guess the whole point, it's like New York, right? Like you don't want to live like far out in Jersey to be in the city.
They have like the ring bond and you basically want to live like in
somewhere
vicinity
there.
Of that. Yeah. And if you go outside of that, which if I moved there, I'd probably like, oh, look at this nice place like way out here. It's like, wow, this is cheap.
Yeah.
It's like, I'll walk 20 minutes to the ring bond.
I'm for that though. Yes. Like I'm for living a little bit out.
Yeah.
And like having more space.
Yeah.
I think space is, as humans, I think we need space.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
There's something about like, being in a box, just confined. It's the same as that like 9-to-5 job, like working in a console every day, going to the office and just being confined to like a small space. And like, I respect people that do it because I couldn't do it.
Got to find your own enjoyment out of it, I guess.
Yeah, definitely.
Drive me insane.
Yeah.
And this is someone who, like, looks at a screen most of the day.
Yeah, that's what we do in dark rooms.
It's like the joke, like, there's the good screen and the bad screen. The bad screen's like work.
Yeah.
The good screen's like all the other stuff. But literally. It's like the same thing.
It's exactly the same. And we probably spend longer.
Probably.
Yeah, we're just a bunch of idiots, aren't we, really? Mate, let's wrap this up. It's been a great conversation.
It's been fun.
Thanks so much for coming on.
Of course.
Yeah, how can people follow you? How can people do all of that?
So I'm probably most active on Instagram. That's @un_live. And then I have, like, Facebook and all that stuff. I've actually been, like, not to get into it a bunch before we get off there, but I've been, like, trying to be on social media less just because it kind of drives me crazy a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. What is it that drives you crazy? Let's talk about it a bit because I think it's really important. Yeah.
It's, I don't know. So I think with COVID, when COVID happened, I kind of like disattached from a lot of things, which was kind of unhealthy. But I think the healthy part of that was I kind of lost this kind of obsession I have with social media a bit.
Yeah.
Where I was like always trying to like think about why am I not getting this likes or this like da 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 da. So then like when I'm coming back into, you know, playing gigs and stuff and like you have to have social media as an artist unless you're like Jeff Mills or something. But it's like, I don't know. There's just something about it. Like the endless scroll, you know, and it's like it doesn't make me feel good.
Yeah.
Like looking at it doesn't make me feel good at all. And it just feels I think it's maybe like you're constantly like comparing yourself to other people, but you're not really comparing yourself to other people, and this is kind of cliche, but it's like, you know, the what people are posting isn't them.
No.
It's like this image that you're trying to cultivate. So It's like you're trying to turn yourself into a product that's like consumable for people.
Yeah.
Which for me is like someone who's always been into, like we talked about earlier, like this weird music and like these little things. Yeah. Like that's the hardest part for me as an artist, I think, is like that balancing act of being like, of course, you know, I make, you know, I write an album. I want people to hear it, you know, so I'm going to post about it. And I want to share it with people. But it's like not having it just be like a product or a content, you know? It's like,
it's tough, isn't it? Because we live in this world that you have to be so marketable and you have to constantly. But you're right. And I've never thought of it like that. Instagram, I'd never come off Instagram going, that was fucking amazing.
You never do.
And I've never thought of that.
Yeah. It's just kind of like, I don't know. To me, it's kind of depressing. And I'll see stuff on there and be like, oh, you know, it's good to see your friends, to see what he's doing. He was see what he's doing. But the overall feeling for me is just kind of like it doesn't make me want to make music or be creative.
Yeah, you're right. It's the first thing I do when I wake up as well.
Yeah.
Is like look at my phone. Like
roll over and look at it. That's what I'm started trying not to do that. But that's like one of the things that's like, doesn't make me feel good. It's just being like,
I wonder if that would change the creativity if you did, like, if you had, like, what's it called? Like a scheduling app.
Yeah.
And, like, on Monday, you scheduled everything.
Yeah. And then you just never look at it again.
You just never look at it.
Yeah. See, that's what I would like. I remember I was asking you, I was like, is there, like, a Facebook? Because you're, like, I'd say you're pretty good with social media and you've got it like dialed in a bit because you've put a lot of work into it. But if there was like a Facebook thing to where I never had to look at Facebook ever and it would just like post my stuff,
that definitely is,
that would be because like I can do Instagram, but Facebook to me is just like a bottomless pit of despair. It's so bad.
Well, I stopped posting on Facebook and then I was like, well, you need to keep it. I don't look at Facebook ever.
Yeah,
like my profile picture has been the same profile picture for fucking years.
Yeah, yeah.
But I recently just connected my Instagram to my Facebook.
Yeah.
And now, because they're all, it never used to be this good, but now that it's the linking's really good.
All right.
So I just, every post automatically goes on Facebook.
I should just do that.
And then it just, it's really easy.
Yeah.
And then you never have to look at it.
I think I did that, and then it was funny because it was like I shared it from the Facebook to Instagram, and then I saw on the Facebook place, like, no one liked it. Because, you know, Facebook likes, they want original content that's posted from their platform, even though it's
the same.
The same people. But then I was like, well, why do I, like, who cares?
Yeah.
If no one, like, it's that's, but that part of me where I was like, oh, I need to make a more engaging post so that people like it. Yeah. That's what, like, kicked into my head.
Fuck it. Fuck them. Like, there comes a, since back touring, I've gone through that phase of like, fuck, my social media is doing shit. Fuck, my social media is doing amazing. And then this weekend I was like, fuck it. If I don't get over 200 comments on a post, I don't care.
Right.
If I don't get this amount of likes,
if you can see, that's the hard part for me is disconnecting that.
Yeah.
Because I think we're similar in that we're always like trying to like push forward and like make something new and do something new. So for me, social media was just like a game almost, you know, it's like, I'm going to do the best to get all this engagement, do this stuff. But that's so like counter to like art to me.
Yeah.
You know,
it's not art.
Right.
It's business. And I think this is the thing is like, but then I also think there's people that have people running their social media.
Yeah.
And you can tell.
Sure.
And it's like, well, this isn't them.
Yeah.
But the whole point of social media is like personable. For me anyway. It's
supposed to be.
It's supposed to be super personable. Of course. Like
that's like the promise of it. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's only like I used to share everything on my social media, like family stuff, everything. And then a few things happened like in the summer of 2020 and I was like, no, I need to disconnect. I need to have part of my life that no one knows about.
Sure.
Which that helped me massively.
Yeah, yeah.
And I put like a screen time on my screen lock on Instagram, even though I go past it every day.
Just to have the reminder.
It just reminds me that like, well, you've been on it. It's a 30-minute screen lock.
Yeah.
You've been on it 30 minutes. I might change it to an hour.
Yeah.
Or like 45 minutes. Because once that screen lock's happened, I generally don't go on it that much or after, but I still unlock it. So I'm just in case. That helped massively. And then I took social media off my home screen and put it on like the far screen.
I do that too. Yeah.
But then you just get used to fucking stuff.
Yeah, did it? It's like two clicks. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and then your brain just gets used to it and it's like, oh.
I saw this thing saying that the average time someone spends online is like 6 to 8 hours a day.
Yeah.
Which, that's like a job. You know, it's like...
Let me pull up my screen.
It's insane.
I pull up my screen time. And it's ridiculous. Like, screen time.
And it's like 6 to 8 hours where you're like living in this...
Daily average on screen. This isn't just on... social media, sure. Just a screen, but 6 hours.
6 hours, yeah.
Daily average.
Yeah.
Like, see all activity. So, day. It's ridiculous. So, WhatsApp, an hour and 20 minutes.
Yeah.
A day. Instagram, 45 minutes. This is just today. Let's go yesterday. Holy fuckaroo. Message platform, 2 hours and 40 minutes. Instagram, an hour and 58 minutes.
Damn.
Spotify, I can't really comment on Spotify because it's always in the background.
So yeah, yeah. It's probably not accurate.
Safari, 47 minutes. And WhatsApp, 45 minutes. That's a lot.
That's a long time.
I was traveling yesterday.
Yeah.
So it's a bit different.
That's a bit different because then you're just like sitting there doing nothing. But
I spent 9 hours on the screen yesterday.
Damn, that's a long time. That's a full work day.
On Sunday, I spent 5 hours. So that was 2 hours and 15 minutes on messages.
Yeah.
An hour and 15 on Instagram, 22 minutes on WhatsApp, and the others just like little bits here and there. It's a fucking lot in it.
It is. And I think it like, I don't know, for me... I mean, it's not good for you mentally. I know it's not good for me mentally. No. Like, even if I tell myself I'm having this, like, detached experience with it, it's still, like, just something about it that doesn't Did you hear about the TikTok thing?
No.
The TikTok Tourette's thing?
No. What?
So apparently there's this big world of like Tourette's on TikTok, right? And there was this big TikToker who like does like cooking or something and they have Tourette's.
Yeah. It's hilarious.
This is like their gimmick.
It,
yeah.
It shouldn't be hilarious, but it's fucking hilarious.
But it's like, this is like their business, right? Yeah. So what happened was there's this huge person on TikTok, and I'll tell the abridged version because I don't know it super well. But basically, they're like these mental institutions were having kids come in with, they said they had Tourette's.
Yeah.
And they all had these same symptoms, and they were all saying the word beans, which is like something this TikToker says.
Yeah.
They specifically say the word beans, like in their Tourette's thing.
Yeah.
So it's, and so it's literally, so these people, so these kids on, they're on TikTok every, all day, literally got Tourette's from TikTok.
Jesus,
like,
Christ.
They had all the physical symptoms and of the Tourette's, you know, and they literally got it off a social media app.
That's so fucked.
It makes you think of, like, you know, like the dancing plagues and like the Middle Ages, you know, where a whole town would go insane and like couldn't stop dancing, and it's like a social disease or whatever. So that same thing can happen like with social media, which it's insane.
Yeah.
And kind of scary. It's like,
yeah, that's crazy.
But if you're like on this thing all day and just like the way people move on TikTok and do dances, it's like specifically for the shape of the screen. Yeah. So it's like people are creating this thing that's like shaped like a screen, like for people to consume because it's like the format. Mm-hmm. It's weird to think about, you know?
It's weird how our lives in the last 8 years have just like morphed into being a success online.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's like you ask kids what they want to be. They want to be like Twitch streamer, YouTuber.
Yeah.
Or they just want to be famous.
Yeah.
That's what a lot of people
That's see. The weird thing. Yeah. I just want to be famous.
Which is like, I never started music because I wanted to be
famous. Who wants to be famous? Realistically, what do you want to be famous for? Do you want...
Yeah.
And I think this is the thing. Do people want to be famous or do people want to be rich?
They just want, like, clout. They want the clout.
Yeah,
like,
but what comes with the clout?
Like money, I guess.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I think that's the thing is, like, I'd rather be fucking the wealthiest person in the world... And no one know who I am.
Oh, absolutely.
Than be the most famous TikToker and have a shit ton of money.
There was some...
Although I'm not fussed about being that wealthy, it doesn't bother me.
There's some famous quote, I can't remember who said it, but it's like a similar thing. It's like,
And I think we are lucky as DJs or live performers. Like, we're not... Like, even like the biggest of the biggest, like let's say Calvin Harris.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he's very famous, of course, but I don't think he's like Justin Bieber, where
he could like walk down a street.
He could walk, where Justin Bieber couldn't,
right?
Or like some TikTokers can't even eat in a fucking restaurant,
right?
And you're like, I wouldn't want that.
Who wants that?
Who wants that fame? Like, yes, it comes with money, but the money doesn't make your life. Your money makes your life easier. To a certain extent.
Yeah.
And then that's it.
Right.
Like, the materialistic shit doesn't make you happy.
Yeah.
Like, we all know wealthy people that have a shit ton of money at some point in their life.
Right.
A nice car makes you feel good for a day.
Sure.
Or whatever. Like, a nice house, it just pays. It's just a house. If you know what I mean. Once you've been in that house, you want a different house.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know what there must be. They must have done some like research on this on like what the optimum amount of money is where you don't need any more money.
Right.
If that makes sense.
Yeah.
Like, how much you need to earn a year where like from being like, let's say you earn 200 grand a year to 500 grand. Like, what's the actual difference?
Right. Yeah.
Like, what? How is it improving your life?
Yeah.
Because materialistic shit doesn't make you happy. We all might not know that, but it doesn't.
I think people just want more money to have more money. Know what else.
But do you think that's an ego thing? Goal.
Maybe. I think, and I mean, it's like this ever in the world, but I think it has something to do with like just America a little bit. Just like you're kind of taught that, you know, you're gonna be a self-made person and you're gonna like make your own fortune.
Yeah.
And to make it to like to make the American dream is like make a bunch of money, buy a house, right? You know, it's it's like,
do you think the American dream is real now?
No, absolutely not.
I think it's gone.
I don't think it ever really was. I mean, it was always like a tainted type thing. Yeah. I think it was more of just like propaganda. It was like, it's like an idea.
Marketing.
Yes, pretty much.
Yeah, to build suburbia America, really. Yeah, it's an interesting one. I think there's, out of that though, I think social media can be extremely powerful.
Sure.
Like if you think like the way the internet's kind of changed the world and made us all so accessible to everybody. Like,
it's like leveled the playing field maybe a bit for people. Yeah.
Massively. Yeah. It's, you don't have to be rich to have a, well, you do have to be rich to have a phone. That's the thing, is that majority of people that have a phone don't realize how lucky they are by having a phone.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, in the grand scheme of things.
In the grand scheme of like the world's population, a lot of people can't afford to have a phone.
Right.
Or maybe they can afford to have a phone, but they can't afford to do everything else.
Right.
If you know what I mean? So that would be interesting to see how many third world countries, how many people have phones over houses.
Yeah.
Or over food on the table every day.
Right.
That could be interesting.
Yeah. I'll choose food.
Same. Fucking hell.
Although you take my phone away, I get like the phantom phone thing. I'm sure you get that. Yeah. Where it's like,
where is it?
Or you'll, oh my, I have my pocket's vibrating. My phone's not even in my pocket. Yeah. Like you feel like really, the vibrate. Yeah.
See, I turned all notifications off.
Yeah.
So I'm like, the only notifications I get is text and calls.
Yeah.
But my phone's on silent and it doesn't vibrate.
I do that, and you know who hates that?
My girlfriend.
Every time I do it, she's like, what if something, you know, which she's right. She's like, you know, what if my car broke down or something, like, and I can't get a hold of you. But I'm always, because it's like the worst thing in the world to me is you're sitting there writing a track and then the phone's vibrating and you're like, you're like in the zone, and then it's like, you know.
Yeah. I think there is ways around that. I think I don't know about on your phone, but I think for certain people you can do certain notifications.
Oh yeah. So maybe I can like have it all silent except for just her.
Like
that's what I need to do.
All of my friends hate it.
Yeah.
I never pick up, like even Ryan, my manager, like he pretty much guarantees I'm not gonna pick up his call first time he calls.
Oh, I'm the worst at that. Who answers their phone anymore? It's like
just fucking text me.
I'm the worst. Yeah.
I much prefer having conversations.
Oh, I do too.
But I think
I like talking to people. I think there's just a thing where it's like we're so like short term thinking now. Yeah. It's like, do I have like time or patience to have like a phone call right now? Yeah. It's like that's a lot of commitment. Yeah. You know, talking to us.
No, I feel that. Do you think that's the same in music though? I find that in music is that we live in such a throwaway society.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. Well, it's the same type thing as social media where it's just like, are you like making art and are you making music, or are you making like content? Which is like, that's the thing I struggle with. I'm like, I have this project, I have these tracks. Yeah. Is this just like content for someone to scroll past in like 1 second on Instagram?
Yeah.
Because that's not what I ever pictured it as.
Yeah.
But for a lot of people, you know, that's what it is. It's like a little Instagram story or something.
Yeah. That's the thing. I've got friends that are like TikTokers that are in like techno.
Mm-hmm.
And I had him on the podcast and he's like, damn, I forgot his name.
How have I forgotten his name?
I've got to pull it up because he's a mate of mine. And I was talking about him the other day and I forgot his name again. And I'm just, my memory's just terrible. It's just really not.
I have to meet someone like 4 times before I remember their name.
Bad Boombox. Okay. You heard of him?
No, I don't think so. No.
He's like, check him out. It's like, it's not your type of techno.
Yeah.
It's very fashionable techno at this moment in time. It's great music. But he's like, blew up on TikTok.
Yeah.
Like, blew the fuck up.
Well, just the amount, like, if you get big on like YouTube or something, the following you're going to have is, there's so many people on YouTube.
Yeah.
Over what, like SoundCloud?
Yeah.
You know, or something.
Exactly. It's, and yeah. What you can get out of that is yeah. like, it's not just, it's a whole business.
Sure. Yeah.
If you've got the right team around you, like, look what Audrey does for a living.
Yeah.
Like, she's giving, like, YouTubers 50 grand for a video.
Right.
For, like,
yeah.
advertising.
Yeah.
Like, she's does deals that, like, 150, 200 grand for one video.
Right.
And you're like, this obscene amounts of money.
Yeah. It's just, there's just like so I mean literally everyone is on YouTube,
right? Yeah,
everyone in the world, yeah. That's like your audience,
yeah,
on
yeah,
there
yeah.
Or in TikTok's probably the second, which I'm not on TikTok because I'm a Luddite but it's probably like the second biggest, you know.
I tried with TikTok and I still try,
yeah,
but for me it's like it goes back to what we were talking right at the beginning, is like I have to be authentic,
sure,
and I can't do something just to do it,
yeah.
And
yeah,
I use TikTok, but I suck at it because I fucking hate it.
Yeah, yeah. And you don't like it or enjoy it enough to like put in the time and effort to make it something that's up to your standard,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. And that's the thing is when I had Bad Boombox on, he went through phases, but he enjoys making videos.
Right.
He's a video editor as well. And
sure,
like that's his job.
It. Yeah, yeah.
Other than DJing and producing, but like he loves making videos.
Yeah.
So what's the most perfect thing? Like you go on his YouTube and it's like, he's not got the biggest following on YouTube, but it's growing because he's making great quality content.
Right.
And it's people like it.
Yeah.
And that's the thing is there's a niche for everyone, right? There's a niche. You could be doing fucking from cooking to sewing. Like
yeah,
somebody's
yeah.
going to watch it.
Oh
somewhere.
Yeah.
Like we were watching earlier how to make a GoPro cam webcam.
Yeah.
Like,
and there's like thousands of
thousands. And you're like, I was thinking this when I was filling the water up last night. I was like, because you've changed the water filter over the time. And I'm like, I wouldn't have a clue how to change this water filter. But I know that someone's made a video on YouTube telling me how to.
That's what I do.
Yeah.
Anytime I have to do something, I look it up on YouTube.
And there's some of these people have millions of subscribers.
Right.
It's fucking amazing.
It's incredible.
It's amazing. And that's not even China.
Yeah.
China's got their own YouTube.
Right, yeah, yeah.
And there's billions of people.
Right, and they have their own, like, Twitch, too, which is, like, the same type thing.
And TikTok was Chinese, wasn't it?
I think so, yeah.
It was Musical.ly before.
Yeah.
And then an American company bought it.
Yeah.
But I think they have TikTok in China.
Right.
Which would be wild.
Yeah.
Which is, if they do have TikTok in China, I could be wrong.
Yeah.
But that's fucked.
Do you ever feel like what we do is, like, kind of, like, antiquated?
What does that mean? That's a big word. For
like,
me.
Like on, like it's on the out.
Oh,
you know what I mean,
dude. One of my friends just made it. I don't want to say who it is, but just made $2 million on NFT.
Yeah,
and they released it, and in one day made $2 million.
Right.
And there's a lot of work that goes into that.
Yeah.
Like, I know how much work goes into that. But I know that it was probably... And it's been years of creating a community.
Sure.
To allow that. Like, if I or you, you or I kind of made an NFT, we don't have the community the size of that person.
Yeah.
Could we make that? I don't know. It would be,
yeah.
But I also know a friend's ex-girlfriend. There was four people... And I think they made like $4 million between them.
It's insane.
On an NFT.
Yeah.
And it was like 3 months of 20-hour days working.
Yeah.
But 3 months work for 20-hour days and you make a million each. Like, or even if it's a quarter of a million, it's like, it's not bad.
Yeah.
But I think with what you're saying is, I think because it's our world, we're so in it.
Yeah.
We're so like, this is all we do.
Right.
And I think by doing that, it actually limits the rest of our lives to a certain extent, because we're so engrossed into what we're doing and we forget that there's a fucking massive world out there.
Yeah.
And nobody listens to techno. Like, yeah. Realistically, in the grand scheme of things, like, when you compare it to anything else or a lot of other things, electronic music is...
It's like a niche within a niche.
Super niche.
Yeah.
Super niche. But I love it.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like, because I do get, I mean, you look at like YouTubers and TikTokers and all these people, and it's like, like going out and like going to a party and like seeing a performer it's such like an ancient thing that I feel like it's always going to be a thing.
Yeah.
It might not like look like what it looks like now, like 20 years from now, but it's a good thing I love to do it because it's like, it's not, you know, the cool new thing to do or whatever.
This is the thing. I think it is the cool new thing to do. But I think it's going through a moment where you're going to get a lot of artists that aren't actual artists. They just want to be famous in this scene.
Yeah. Which has been happening for a while.
But
maybe more.
I think more so now. Yeah. Like, I've been hit up by so many people that are like, legit, I want somebody to write my music for me. I want somebody to manage me. I want to be DJing.
Sure.
And I obviously care about the music, but they don't want to write the music. They don't want to go through that process that
they just want to like be on a stage and have people looking at them.
Yeah.
Is that what they want?
I think,
cause if they don't like the music,
I think they like the music,
yeah,
but they have no relationship between the making of that music.
Yeah. See, that's weird to me. Like, I mean, I love performing, but it's like the end goal for me is not to be like standing somewhere and having a bunch of people look at me or, you know.
Well, I think that if that was, you would have done a completely different route.
Yeah.
I think we all would have.
Of course.
Yeah. I think also what's happened with social media and what DJs share on social media and what producers share on social media and how their lives are is very different to what their actual lives are.
Of course.
If you know what I mean. So like,
you don't see like the, oh, I'm sitting in my hotel room for 5 hours by myself, like like in the dark.
No.
Like that's not on social media.
Like, what's on social media? Fucking private jets.
Yeah.
I'm scared about next summer because I'm literally going to start unfollowing people. If I see another DJ post a private jet, like COVID actually like helped me keep following people.
Sure.
Because no one was traveling.
Yeah, yeah.
But this year... next year, when private jets in the summer start happening for Ibiza, I'm just going to be like, absolutely not.
That's insane.
It's my feed was just my mates.
That is ludicrous. Private
jets. And I'm like, what? Where did this happen? Why?
Yeah.
It's kind of virtue signaling.
Well, yeah, it's like flexing. It's like
how big's my dick?
Look what I got. Yeah.
And I don't like that because I think it's almost like a kick in the teeth to everybody that's coming to see you play.
Well, sure. Yeah.
It's like, how much are you earning to come to see?
Yeah.
Like, I'm paying.
And then this person's like, I paid $80 for this or whatever.
For like an hour.
$20 for a water or whatever.
And I think comes a point where it's like, you're actually removing yourself from the community. However, we've live in a day and age where that's cool.
Well, yeah, and a lot of people in the crowd probably think that's cool. They're like, oh, look, this person's got all this stuff. That's cool. I'm going to go see this person.
And that's where I think this kind of community's, this like massive producers that or DJs or whatever they want to be, is they don't actually want to be the artist. They want to get what the successful artists have got.
Sure.
And don't realize the work it takes to get there.
They just want like the end result where I'm like standing on a stage in front of a bunch of people or whatever.
Which if
I was in that situation, I feel like that would feel kind of hollow. It's like you did. Yeah. Cause you have no relationship to it.
It's weird, isn't it?
Yeah.
But I think that's the thing. I think fame on social media is, and fame in life is sometimes bigger than this. That's all they want.
Yeah.
That's all they want.
I think it's just kind of like warped people's,
yeah,
minds and perceptions a bit about things, which is like why me personally, I'm just like,
stick to it.
Try to like,
yeah,
not spend all my time on Instagram or whatever.
It's definitely a good thing, man. It's definitely a good thing. Mate, I'm literally going to piss myself.
Yeah, I know.
Let's wrap this up.
We've done.
Yeah.
We've nearly done 2 hours.
Nice.
That was great.
Was
a good time. Enjoyed it, man. Really
enjoyed
it.
We talk all the time, so I kind of forgot the thing was even on.
Yeah,
so.
Same. That was great. Thank you so much.
Yep.
Go follow UUN.
UUN _ live.
_live.
Yeah.
Mate, big love.
It's been fun.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
See you in a bit.
All right.
And that's a wrap. Hope you enjoyed it. Loved that one. It was a really good conversation. Don't forget to share it. Don't forget to subscribe. And I will see you next time.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.